Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
What up? Welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 82. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, you've been replaced by Jay Leno.
Dude, really?
I hate to tell you, but this is your last show on Dudes on Hockey.
Damn it! I can do a Jay Leno impression. Actually, no, I can't.
Actually, I'll tell you what. We'll make a deal here, right? You can be on right after Dudes on Hockey.
Okay, sweet.
And we'll still call it Dudes on Hockey.
Oh.
But Jay Leno's going to take your place.
Well, dude, I think that's going to besmirch the memory of Dudes on Hockey, and I absolutely have to decline.
All right, well, that's cool, because Carson Daly's here to take your spot anyways.
Even better.
Ooh, what a talent. That sucks what's happening to him. I feel bad.
Conan got screwed.
I'm not necessarily a big Conan O'Brien fan. I think he's funny, and definitely has some good bits on his show. But I don't watch The Tonight Show. If I watch anything late night, it's David Letterman, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't watch late night at all, so I just sort of...
Because you go to bed at 10.
No, that's not
true. Like an old woman.
No, because I play Xbox late, and I never watch TV.
I see how
it
goes.
I have so much other television to watch.
Cover me. I'm going in. Call of Duty 6. Cover me. On my flank. Private Ryan, where are you?
See, that's not far off, dude. That's a pretty good impression. Have you been playing secretly?
I have. I've been following you. I'm the one storming the beach right behind you.
No, all I've been watching on TV tonight is catching up on the Sharks game, so I am all up to date now.
Good for you, dude.
Everything's set, so...
It's been an interesting week in Sharks land. It certainly didn't start off that great.
No, you know, the Sharks sort of managed to right the ship a little bit, as we've seen before. The ship goes up, the ship goes down. We lose 5, win 8 in a row. We have a couple bad losses, and then we beat LA and Phoenix, 2 division rivals that we've had trouble beating all season. But first... We have to tackle the Wings game because that was the one over the weekend. We didn't get to talk about it last week. Lose to the Wings 4-1. Just not good times, man. Just not good. It was just a disappointing effort. It was a disappointing output. Well, I guess we scored the first goal. The first half of the first period looked pretty encouraging.
Sure.
And then it all just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, I thought the first line looked pretty dominant to start. It looked like we might begin to have our way with them a little bit. You know, Marlowe scored about halfway through the period. You know, the other big names were involved in Heatley and Boyle. It was kind of feeling good times there for a little bit. But Detroit just kept it close enough. And then once they broke the seal, dude, it was trouble. And they scored those three goals. I mean, even though there was some time between the first and the second, I mean, it happened so fast. And all of a sudden we were 3-1 in those. That sea of red at the tank,
yeah,
sort of exploding and, you know,
yeah,
cheery, jovial red wingness. It was
it
was upsetting.
Yes, yeah, it was. Do you remember what you said before the game started? Do you remember what we talked about and what you said?
That I really could go for a Molson.
Yes, that was one part of it.
That I wished you would stop getting the rainbow ice Dippin' Dots.
Yes, I remember that conversation as well.
What did we say?
You said that. Well, we were both not happy about the way the fourth line was constituted. First,
right? No, that's right. I do remember this.
We talked about that, and you also said the Sharks need to jump out to a 2 or 3 goal lead, or the Wings are going to catch up.
It's coming back to me. That's true. Let's go back to the first topic. You know, with the Red Wings, you look at how they're constructed. I mean, they did roll out Brad May, right?
Yeah.
You know, who's not a goon, but he's kind of
goon enough.
Yeah, I mean, he's sort of like a more polished version of Brad Staubitz, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he kind of offers that same kind of skill set, although he's played on a winner. I mean, I'm trying to remember, did he win a cup with Colorado?
The Ducks, maybe. He was on the
maybe,
Ducks for a
while. Yeah, I wonder, you know, if he was on that Colorado team too. I mean, he's kind of bounced around a little bit, but, you know, the Red Wings otherwise, like you look at their players and how many guys they have out, but still, you looked at their roster that they put out there on Saturday night, we recognized every name.
Every name.
I knew exactly who everybody was, even Doug Janik.
But to be honest, they got a lot of guys back. Dan Cleary was back. Zetterberg was back. Who else? Phil Pelot was back.
Sure, but they're missing so many important players to that team.
They're missing two.
You know, Franzen, they're missing Lilja. They were missing...
Oh, Cronwall.
Cronwall.
Holmstrom.
Those are four
Lilja
pretty important
they haven't
players.
Had in a long time.
I know, but dude, those are four big names.
Yeah.
That's like taking, You know, that's like taking Chloe and Blake and actually, you know, both those names don't quite sound as appealing as the four that I previously mentioned, do they?
Murray.
So, you know, yeah, Murray. I guess you could. I don't know, dude. It just.
Yeah.
We should have beat them.
Yeah.
In the state that they were in, and we didn't just lose. We kind of. It was like the third time on a home ice that we just kind of got thumped.
Yeah.
And I think people had seen enough by the end. The Boo Birds were coming out, and it was definitely deserved.
Do you know how many times? So this is the third loss at home for the Sharks in regulation by 3 goals or more. Do you know how many times we did that last year?
0.
Actually, no. We did it 3 times as well last year.
Oh, really?
Yes, but all were after March 1st.
Oh.
So you can...
Well, wait, how's that supposed to make me feel better?
Because the president, we were already at the top of the West. The president's trophy was maybe not decided, but
so what are you saying? They've checked out now in January instead of March?
No, I'm saying they should be playing well and they're not. And the Sharks kind of checked out. But all 3 losses last year were by 3 goals: Dallas, Anaheim, and Phoenix in March and April. The year before, the Sharks lost only 4 times all year by 3 goals or more at home. This year, it's already been 3, and 2 of them have been bad: 7-2 and 6-2. So, I don't like the way this is going. The Sharks' home dominance has seemingly evaporated to a certain extent, and teams can come in and sort of have their way.
Yeah, they're average at home now. I mean, it's not like it was last year where they went X amount of games without losing in regulation on home ice.
Right.
You know, that's just
20-0-2 or whatever.
It's definitely not as daunting for opposing teams to come into the tank and play, and that's got to be changed. I know that Rob Blake's talked about that they need to establish home ice, and they really haven't quite been able to do that yet. You know, I don't feel like LA and Detroit and Chicago or Calgary, they really care about coming to San Jose and being fearful that they might drop that game.
Right.
It seems like it's just sort of like playing anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So that needs to be fixed, dude. You know, on the other hand, you know, we're talking about the fourth line, and we're also talking about they needed to jump out ahead, and they weren't able to do it. Just 1-0 against the Red Wings. It's just close enough. Jimmy Howard played great.
He played well. And the thing is, when it's a close game, the Sharks' fourth line, you can't give them a regular shift. You can't give Stobbins and Shelley a regular shift against, who is it, Drew Miller. I think they might have even had Cleary down there for a time.
Right.
I mean, and Brad May some of the time. I mean, that's a huge mismatch. There's no good matchup for the fourth line versus any of Detroit's lines. So they're not going to play a huge amount. And then Detroit's going to throw out their 3 regular lines as always. And the Sharks there's just not a good matchup there. I mean, the first line is the best line in the NHL right now. Let's just be honest. I mean, I think, I can't remember who was interviewed in the Sharks game I watched, in the last 2 days, is that, you know, Marlowe's the best left wing in the NHL at the moment. There's no doubt. Joe Thornton is second or first in points among centers. I mean, that's the best line in the NHL. But there's a big step down once you get past that. And Detroit seems to match up better against the second, third, and fourth lines.
Yeah,
and that's what kind of killed us.
But you have to think that that's not going to be the way it is the rest of the year. You know, Pavelski and Klo are slumping right now. Setoguchi has basically disappeared as far as point production.
Yeah.
They really miss Manny Malhotra, which we've talked about before, and hopefully he's going to be back tomorrow night against Boston. But, you know, not having Malhotra out there is a chain reaction of events. And, you don't have the flexibility to slide people up. Jed Ortmeier's game has taken a major step backwards without Malhotra.
I think
just
so.
Just doesn't seem to quite feel the same energy out there without him. You're then having to move Scott Nickel up. You're then forced to have to play Brad Staubitz, or you're bringing in a rookie like McCarthy who, has been, mediocre, sort of.
He's gotten a really good grade for the Worcester Sharks.
Sure.
We'll be talking about that later on in the show.
But that hasn't quite, the comments, made there haven't quite transferred to, the NHL level yet. Now, I'm not writing the kid off. I'm just saying, they had a good shift. I mean, I saw a good shift against the LA, game where, him and Mitchell and Ortmeier had a little something going there. And you want to talk about someone who's been non-existent. How about Torrey Mitchell?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, the supporting cast has got to step it up if the Sharks are going to be able to hang with the big boys, dude.
That's true. So let's get off the bummer topic and get to the good topics. And that two teams the Sharks have, what was the stat I put on the blog this week? 8 games against this week, and the Sharks have given up at least 1 point in all 8. I think that's the situation. Sharks have not won in regulation against LA or Phoenix up to this point, and they win in regulation both nights. So I'd say that's a big turnaround, both away games. That's a big deal. You know, it's not easy to beat LA. It was a tight game. Ersberg, he played well. I mean, it was a tight game. It's a close game. Drew Doughty's a great player, and Phoenix is tough. Although we did face Jason LaBarber, so we faced backup goalies both nights, and Nabby played both nights, and we're gonna have some more on Nabby later in the show. But I liked both games. I mean, there was a little bit of Mean Joe in the LA game,
yes,
that we liked, but there wasn't a lot of Mean Joe in Phoenix, so that was kind of a bummer.
Well, Mean Joe can't come out both nights, dude.
Really? Why not?
What? That's asking too much. Mean Joe, you know, only comes out on Mondays, first of all.
Oh.
Sort of, you know, like how you wear the black jerseys on Fridays.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So let's just make that clear. Let's not ask too much of Mean Joe.
Got it.
Dude, I'll say this about the LA game and the Phoenix game. I didn't expect them to do very well in either, and they won both games in regulation. So
yeah, you predicted you predicted 1 point in 2 games.
I did, because you know that's the way it's been going. You know, they go up and down. They don't seem to get up for the big games. These 2 games were important, and they won them. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have to give them a lot of credit for that. You know, the Sharks are finally now putting some distance between the other teams in the division.
Yeah.
You know, very quietly, as we're maybe picking them apart a little bit here, the Sharks are now 10 points ahead of Phoenix again.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when they were tied with LA. I mean, LA, even though they play us pretty well, and I think they're going to get back in the picture here a little bit, I mean, they're now 14 points behind us.
Right.
So you wouldn't think that, by the way, you know, we match up against each other, but the Kings have gone backwards a little bit. Phoenix has cooled off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Sharks are getting some distance here. Dallas has really cooled off. We're 18 points ahead of them as
right.
we're recording right now.
So it's good.
Yeah, it is good. We're still, you know, we can pick them apart all we want,
right.
dude, right? But we're still the best team in the NHL right now.
In
67 points.
Yeah.
In points now. I mean, Buffalo and New Jersey have 3 games in hand on us,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, they're only at 44 and we're at 47. But I guess it's a good position to be in. It's just hard not to feel too excited about it.
Yeah. I mean, the secondary scoring thing is an issue. And although they didn't score in either of these games, which is a bummer, and I know this is a small consolation, but the second line didn't look bad in either game.
No.
And Seto had chances. He had good chances in both games. He's definitely gripping the stick really hard. He's shooting quickly. He's trying to get the puck on net as fast as he can in the hopes that a goal will go in, because he doesn't want to miss the net. And he had sort of a half breakaway against Phoenix, and he didn't really turn it into the kind of scoring chance that you would normally expect from him. He just sort of shot it into his chest. It looked like a real sort of tight grip in the stick, really hard kind of shot. Pavelski hit the post against LA, I think. So, you know, these guys are doing, you know, they've had some really good shifts. They put together some really good shifts in the past 2 days. And if the first line is really scoring at the clip that they are, well, now we know that the second line doesn't need to produce in order to win hockey games, but at least they're playing well, right? Or am I just
no,
really
No, you're right.
To
and they're going
to
come out of it. And we saw how slow Klo started, and then he kind of came out of it. There's no way that Pavelski and Klo and Seto are going to be blanked the rest of the season.
Well, sure.
But they're going to come out of it, dude. But the thing that I like is that, you know, the top line, they're scoring big goals. They're carrying the team right now. The big guys are coming through for the boys. And you know, the second line's going to turn it around. I really think that once Malhotra comes back, the balance of the bottom 9 forwards is going to be
better,
back into perspective, dude.
It's really amazing how important of a guy he is to the team.
He is. And he's a player that we really severely missed last year. And I think we've missed him now. You know, we've seen, you know, the team take some pretty big lumps without him, you know, losing 2 big games, you know, kind of getting hammered twice. Did he play in that first LA massacre? I think he did, actually. Now you're going to have to take a look.
Crap, I can't remember.
Oh, I got it right now, dude. I got it right now. I can tell you that Malhotra... Oh, no, he didn't play in that game. So, there you have it. And Jay Leach did. Damn him.
There you have it. Well, you know, I mean, Marlowe, Nabby both playing great. Marlow, two goals against Phoenix, a shorty and a power play. That's a nice combination to have.
What do you think about the Boston and Edmonton matchups coming this weekend?
Well, Boston's banged up. They're missing Savard. They're missing Mark Stewart. And they're missing...
Patrice Bergeron.
That's right. So, you know, I like our chances against Boston.
We're obviously catching them. They're playing in Anaheim right now as we're recording.
I think they were tied
3-3.
Oh, they were winning at one point.
They lost the game 4-3. I'm looking at it right here. They lost it 4-3.
Wow.
Oh, that juggernaut Steve Eminger beat them in the end.
And, of course, Edmonton is one of the worst teams in the West. So I like our chances against both those teams. I hope we can turn this 2-game winning streak into a 4-game winning streak.
We should be able to. I mean, there's no reason why. They should beat Boston pretty handily tomorrow night. I'll be disappointed if they don't. Mm-hmm. Boston is one of the worst teams in scoring this year. They're bottom five. They're really scrapping. They lose a tough one tonight in Anaheim.
Yeah, and they have to play again tomorrow night,
right,
on the road.
I'm saying Sharks get 4 points this weekend.
Hope so. I hope you're right, dude.
And then we got Calgary on Monday.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's going to be a good one.
Yep. Looking forward to that one.
All right, dude. One thing I wanted to talk about, actually, is there was a great post on Sharks page with mid-season.
As usual.
As per usual. This one by Daryl Hunt, who wrote a half-season report card of all the guys in Worcester. So I encourage you all to read that for yourself, but we're going to touch on some highlights here. One is that John McCarthy, who has been on the big club, did get an A. He was the captain, a seventh-round draft pick, and a captain of Boston University that won national championship. So this guy has really, turned it on in the pros. I didn't really hear much about him, but he got a really good grade. And obviously our boy Logan Couture got an A. Doug Wilson said, I think, between periods in the Phoenix game that
Logan Couture... It was the LA game.
It was the LA game.
Yeah.
That he's one of the best players in the AHL,
yes,
period.
He is. Yeah, yeah.
Not only one of the best rookies. So
right.
Couture is a monster right now. It seems like he's averaging 2 points a game every time I read a recap again on Sharks page.
Well, that whole top line.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Ferriero and Couture, and I think it's Zaleski.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't be stopped. I mean, you know, you got to think that the Worcester Sharks have a pretty legitimate shot of getting at least to the final four in the AHL. What's the cup there? The Calder Cup. You know, so they're going to be in the mix there if we don't poach all their good players at the end.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Couture could definitely be a candidate for coming up and being one of the black aces, as they're called, the guys that
Couture had 9 shots on goal tonight.
Oh my God.
9 shots. Now, he didn't get any points, but you know, these are his numbers if they don't know. 28 games, 39 points plus 11.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty great.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, over a point per game, you know, he's been a huge contributor and their record with him is just astounding. So I look forward to his future, dude.
Me too. One guy we look forward to the future of is a guy that we were huge on early in the season, Nick Petrecki. Let me read the entire snippet here from Sharks page. Petrecki had a lot of problem transitioning from the college game to the pro game of the AHL. In college, Petrecki was a very physical player that outmuscled many of his opponents. In the AHL, Petrecki was no longer the strongest player on the ice, and because of that, he needed to relearn how to play defense because he can no longer rely on the things that got him by at Boston College. Lately, Petrecki's play has improved, but he's got a long road ahead to be ready for the NHL grade D.
Wow, that's rough. I'd really like to talk to him, and you know, we've talked about possibly having on, you know, inviting on Daryl Hunt or maybe even Max from Sharks Pig also to talk about Nick Petrecki because God, a D. I mean, that's just disappointing, dude.
It is, but you know, it's.
Doug Wilson didn't have like glowing things to say, but he said he was improving.
He said he's learning the pro game.
But what did he say that just made you feel warm and fuzzy inside?
He said that, I don't know, what did he say?
He said he's working with Brian Marchand
daily. That's good news.
That made me smile, dude. That's just like, oh, okay.
He can turn into a bigger, stronger Brian Marchand, that spells only good things for the Sharks for the future.
It certainly makes sense that's maybe why he's not here right now. You know, he's definitely, although I mean,
he's
the
not
pre,
ready.
The,
it's well, obvious.
But the preseason game we saw him in, dude,
right.
he looked pretty good to me, but I guess that's why I'm just some fan talking into a microphone.
But that also has a different level of intensity than even the AHL regular season.
True.
And you've got to learn how to play a lot of games. And usually college players, one of the problems they have is they hit a bit of a wall. They don't play nearly as many games in college as they do in the pros. And once they get to that 40 or 50 game mark, you see a lot of college players kind of tail off in terms of productivity, and we may very well see that with Petrecki. I think it would be foolish of the Sharks to try and put him in an NHL lineup when he's got that going for him, as well as, you know, these things that Daryl says, which I, you know, certainly believe and you know, would like to witness for myself. But since we're 3,000 miles away, we have to take the words of others, and that's what we're going to do. So good stuff. Another notable A is our buddy Alex Stalock. Simply put, Stalock is the best Sharks goaltender to play in Worcester and is second only to Dwayne Roloson in Worcester's 15-year AHL history. This is a guy, this is his first year in Worcester. He's right. Already the best Worcester Shark goalie ever.
Fantastic.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. So this guy, certainly, he's going to be an A. It says the NHL is definitely in his future, grade A.
Great. Can I tell you one more player that caught my eye here? I mean, there's several, and we want
Brandon Mashinter.
Well, no. I would have to say that the grade of B to Mike Moore.
Yeah.
All right. You know, and the comment here is that, you know, Moore, if it weren't for his high salary cap hit, would have likely been one of the players we would have seen up here already.
Mm-hmm.
So that's unfortunate. You know, I mean, the guy has a almost nearly $1 million cap hit, and that's what's preventing him from possibly stepping in and playing instead of someone like Jay Leach, you know, who's been, you know,
he's a
fine, you know what I mean, but yeah. Nothing special, and you know, maybe Moore could contribute a little bit more.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Dude,
I walked into that one.
Dude, I'm going to emails.
Okay.
You can send us emails, questions at dudesonhockey.com. First one's from Frankie D.
Frankie D.
Frankie D. Do you guys think Nabby should rest more the second half of the season so he can be nice and fresh for the playoffs? If so, do you think there will be any consequences putting Greiss in the net more often?
Absolutely not. Nabby should play 82 games. He should play every game for Russia.
Yeah.
And then I think even if Jamie Quick needs a rest in L.A. and we have a night off, we should loan him.
Yeah.
Loan him out.
Well, if Alex Stalock needs a rest in Worcester, we should send him out there.
Send Nabby to Stockton. Have him play some games there. He really needs a tune-up.
The answer is yes. He has to rest more this season. I'm not happy with the amount of work he's getting. He's playing great. He's having, you know, in terms of the more important stats, or what a lot of people like is the most important stat, save percentage. He's a .924 save percentage, which is the best save percentage of his career so far.
So it's hard to justify taking him out.
Yeah.
It's hard to justify taking him out, especially in big games. They needed him. You know, would they have won both these games with Greiss? It's hard to know. You know, Nabby's on track to start 72 games right now. The most he's ever started in his career, dude. Yeah.
Is it?
No, I'm asking.
77.
Yeah, that's right. 77.
2 years ago.
Yes. So this is not uncharted territory for Nabby, but when's the last time a goalie who started 70-plus games in the regular season won a Stanley Cup?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I think people have looked into this, and that's the case. The answer is yes. I like the way Greiss has played. Greiss has had some good outings. I don't understand. I guess, you know, he's played both games in Phoenix, and maybe that was a justification why they started Nabby in Phoenix last night. Greiss needs to play more. It's just that simple. And for more reasons on that, we have a second email from Andy Clark, who is our buddy.
Cheerio!
In the UK.
That's right, Andy. I hope you're having some fish and chips while you listen to us right now.
That's right. I'm going to start with his
last... Is it Vegemite in the UK, or is it Marmite? I never know, because
I thought Vegemite was an Australian
thing. Yeah, but then maybe Marmite is British. Andy, let us know.
Yeah, let us know, because these are important questions.
Yeah, they are. We must know.
But let me start with his last paragraph. Interestingly, on the subject of summer moves, which I'm sure will come up again at some point, I know you guys have clear logic that Marlowe is the one to keep, but when you ask the question to two people, EJ Raddick and Mark Purdy, they were both without blinking saying Nabokov was the one to keep on the basis that an elite goaltender is not easily replaceable. I wonder if either of these have swayed your opinion on the matter. Dude?
This is not going to be an easy decision for Doug Wilson to make, period.
No.
All right?
Actually, I'll tell you what I think in a minute, but continue.
But I think that, you know, you look at the career progression of Marlowe and you see where he is right now, that he's gone from being just a good NHL player to being probably one of the best players in the entire league. You have to keep him.
Right.
You have to keep him. He's not... He's irreplaceable, I think, right now. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to find someone to take his place. Whereas I can think of two words that might be able to replace Nabokov and not be as good initially, but be good enough. You know, and those two words are Alex Stalock.
Well, in terms of your question, Andy, has this swayed your opinion on the matter? The answer, for me at least, is no. I still think that they can make do without Nabokov. I like Mark Purdy and I like EJ Raddick, and they're both knowledgeable. EJ watches a million different games, but he doesn't watch Alex Stalock. He doesn't, you know, have a scouting report on Thomas Greiss. So I don't think he's, you know, well, he's probably better than we are in terms of evaluating NHL talent. There's no doubt about that. But I think if you can only keep one, you keep Patty. What I think is that Doug Wilson has already decided to keep Nabokov because of this workload. The Sharks have not seen enough of Thomas Greiss, and they will not see enough of him to make a decision on whether he can be the number one goalie. Therefore, it's my opinion now that Nabby will be resigned, no question about it. They can't play him 60 games and then start a rookie next year with Thornton in a contract year. They're probably going to re-sign Patrick Marleau. They got Healy on a huge contract. They got Boyle on a huge contract. You know, they got Klo on a big contract, and now you're going to have a huge hole at goaltender. I thought they had to answer that question this year. They're not answering it. They want Nabokov. That's the situation. I'm convinced now.
Yeah, I see a lot of logic in your answer, but I want to counter with this. Haven't there been a lot of illogical roster moves this year? I mean, I'm questioning the fact if they actually even have a plan, or are they just going by the seat of their pants? I feel like they're flying management-wise by the seat of their pants on a daily basis, adjusting the cap hit and, you know, seeing who the roster du jour is of the day.
But see, my answer to that is these are tactical moves and not strategic. Sending Demers up and down for two games isn't a strategic decision. It's not that, oh, well, we don't believe in Demers for the future. They have to do these juggling acts in order to stay under the cap.
So what's the difference between not playing Demers and not playing Greiss? How do they not believe in Greiss then? It's the same thing.
Greiss is under the on the cap, so they're not moving. They're not shuffling Greiss around.
Right. They're not playing Greiss. They're not playing Demers.
They're not playing Demers because of cap. That's the reason.
Right.
So that's a sticky point they've gotten themselves into. That's why they're playing Demers. They're not playing Greiss because they don't want to play him, and they're playing Nabokov because they want to play him and they think he's the goalie for the future.
Hmm.
And Demers, I think, is just. It's not a question of whether he's going to be a good player, whether he's going to be on this team or not. We both know that's the case, or we both hope that's the case. But with Greiss, I think they've already thrown their cards into that, you know.
There's going to be some major changes then.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time believing that they're going to be able to justify it to their fan base that they let Patrick Marleau walk away the year that he scored 50 goals.
Right. They're not. They're going to sign both of them.
Then what happens to the young guys, dude?
Well, this takes us to the second paragraph in Andy's email. Although, for my opinion, I would avoid Phaneuf for Vlasic and Pavelski, by the way, or even Seto. This is Andy speaking, not me. Excuse me. The Sharks will have big enough decisions to make in the summer about Marleau and Nabby, and with both Seto and Pavs as RFAs, Wilson is going to have a job on his hands as it is, without having to find an extra $3 or $4 million cap hit for Phaneuf.
Can you read it with a British accent?
No, because my British accent's horrible. Oh. The salary dump last summer. That's so offensive.
I'm sure Andy's laughing.
I hope so.
Or he's turned it off. Keep going, dude.
Anyway, I hate to think of what other salary drum trades we'd have to make in order to fit in Phaneuf. And the idea of having Phaneuf on the team would be an awesome prospect, but I don't think any team could have six players at $6 million or above. That would be Joe, Patty, Heater, Boiler, Nabby, and Phaneuf. And be able to build a decent supporting cast around them. I absolutely agree with that statement. So this is the question, Vlasic is signed, but we have Pavelski and Seto as RFAs. So I know you have some stuff on this, which you haven't told me about. So there's something to be said for Seto, and I don't know what that is, but let's roll that into the next thing.
These are really tough decisions, and I think when you talk about re-signing Marleau and Nabby, I mean, you have to take into account is, you know, we've already talked about how much money we think Pavelski's going to get. You know, it's going to be in the $4 million range, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we did speculate that if Seto was going to be in the 30 to 40 goal range like last year, he might get in the upwards of Phil Kessel money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not going to happen anymore.
No, it's not.
It's not. I mean, unfortunately for him, Seto's probably playing himself more into the, you know, he might end up having to do something like Ryan Clough did, where he just took a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about on the blog, you know, we've seen, you know, Fear the Finn wrote about maybe acquiring someone like Dennis Seidenberg, and, mm-hmm. you know, we like that guy, but, you know, the Sharks do not have the cap room to absorb a $3 million contract for like a draft pick. That's not something they can do this year. They can't do a Brian Campbell type deal.
Right.
So really, the Sharks' best trading chips, as I've been saying for months, are their forwards. Mm-hmm. All right, dude. So we're going to play a little game, dude.
Okay.
Play a little game. Do we have any music?
What's the game? What do we want? We want...
Oh, yeah. That's good. That's dramatic.
Okay.
Dude, I'm going to be Doug Wilson.
Okay.
And you're going to be a GM from another team, and I'm going to tell you who you are.
Okay.
I'm going to make a trade proposal to you.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me from that GM's perspective, would you do it or not?
Got it.
And then afterwards, we'll talk about whether you think my offer was terrible.
Okay.
All right. You ready?
Got it.
All right. You can cut the music now.
Oh, okay. Sure. Sorry.
No, go ahead and start it again.
Oh, okay.
No, go ahead and cut it.
Oh, okay.
All right. Dude.
Dude.
You are.
I am.
You have the face of a turtle and the scowl of a mean man. You are Daryl Sutter.
I'm Daryl Sutter.
All right. You ready?
Calgary Flames. Got it.
Hi, Daryl. Doug Wilson on the phone.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Good to talk to you. How are things up there in Calgary? Is it cold?
It's good, my
buddy. I bet it's cold, isn't it? Have you read that Theo Fleury book? It's funny.
Funny.
Yeah, all right. Listen, hey, Daryl, I know that you guys are scoring okay, but you can always get a little bit more scoring. And you know, we could use some help on the blue line, so let's talk about making a deal, okay?
Right, okay.
Daryl, I'm willing to offer you for the more talented young forwards in the league, Devin Setoguchi.
Mm-hmm.
But in return, you know, I'd like maybe an underrated defenseman, not one of your top three, but this guy, he signed through 2011 at almost $900,000. So the money's a bit of a wash. He's second on your team in hits and second in block shots, but only fourth in ice time. Mm-hmm. I think I can give him a little more ice time. I'll give you Seto for Mark Giordano, but you got to give me a third round pick too.
Sorry, I sound like JD on the Howard Stern Show.
Dude, what do you think?
I think Daryl Sutter would do that deal.
Now, what do you think about it from our side? I was surprised when I looked this up to see what a strong contributor Giordano is.
I do like Mark Giordano.
I think he would look pretty good. He's another puck-moving defenseman that has a seems like a little bit of mean in him.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd look pretty good playing in there. He filled the role that we want Demers to be, but he's not ready to be. And he's inexpensive, and he's signed for another year, dude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I think... Well, yeah, they got a lot of D signed. They got their top four signed for a while. They got Adam Party. They got Stefan Cronwell. I think that might be in the cards.
Yeah, that's not a bad deal.
That's not a bad deal.
All right, give me the music again.
Okay, sorry.
You are now...
I am now...
someone I hated as a player, but now he's my best friend.
Uh-huh.
You are Joe Nieuwendyk.
Uh-huh.
All right.
I knew this was probably coming.
Here we go.
Okay.
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
You finally cleared up that mess with the bread hole mess, huh?
Yeah. That guy
pretty funny.
Sucks.
Yeah.
He sure does.
And his dad was a hack.
He was.
Listen. All right. I want to make you an offer because, you know, you guys are, you know, kind of middling around right now. I know you're looking to put your stamp on your team. And I need some help on the blue line, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, Joe.
Yeah?
Nui. Can I call you Nui?
No.
Okay.
Joe.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to offer you... I almost said Theo Fleury. I'm going to offer you Devin Setoguchi.
Uh-huh.
Right? And good player, young player.
Uh-huh.
But in return, I would like to get a good puck-moving, restricted free agent defenseman from you. How about Setoguchi for Matt Niskanen? What do you say?
Matt Niskanen. I don't think I would do that trade.
Ooh,
if I were Joe Nieuwendyk.
Really?
Yeah. Matt Niskanen's a part of... He's part of the future of this franchise.
Setoguchi's a 30 to 40 goal scoring forward. He's just in a little bit of a slump.
We have Fabian and Brunstrom. What do we need Devin Setoguchi for?
I'll take him too.
You know, I think that'd be a tougher deal for Nieuwendyk to make for one big reason is that he doesn't have a lot of I mean, he's got Stefan Robidas signed long term, but Daly's only got one more year. Carlos Skrastens has never been a great defenseman, in my opinion. He's only got one more year. And then they're dealing with Fistrick, who I don't think is as good of a prospect, and then Nicklas Grossman. So
Trevor Daly.
Yeah, and Trevor Daly has only got one more year, and then he's a UFA. So, right. And I like Trevor Daly. So they have a lot less security on the blue line, and I think they're going to want to keep Matt Niskanen because they're going to, you know, keep him for not a huge amount of money. So I like that deal. I like Niskanen even more than I like Mark Giordano, but I don't think Nieuwendyk would do it. Well, even taking aside the whole division rival thing.
Right. Well, we saw LA and Dallas make a huge trade one year, you know, by sending Lubinier, Matias Norstrom to Dallas. Mm-hmm. All right, one more time, dude. Hit the music. You are now Peter Chiarelli.
Oh, really?
Ready for this?
I think I'm ready. Interesting.
Hey, Peter, how you doing? How you like San Jose? How's the Fairmont Hotel treating you?
You know, it's pretty good.
For the record, we don't know for sure if the Bruins are staying at the Fairmont.
No, I don't think they usually stay. Anyway.
But I did see the Calgary Flames eating at the grill there once.
Oh, nice.
It's true. Oh, I'm sorry. Peter.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Listen, you have one of the worst offenses in the league, and you just lost to the Ducks. It's embarrassing, frankly.
Well, Mark Savard's out. What are you going to do?
I know. Well, you know, you could make a trade, which is why I'm calling you.
I don't have Joe Thornton anymore. I traded him. Actually, it wasn't me.
Listen, let's talk about this in person tomorrow over some Unamas tacos. But what I would like to throw out there is, you know, I've got an idea. I've got a forward here. He's making a little bit of money. I want to make you an offer that you can't refuse.
Uh-huh.
I want to offer you Ryan Clough.
Right.
He's going to spice up your offense.
Uh-huh.
But I want Dennis Weidman.
You want Dennis Weidman.
The money is almost a wash.
It's a wash. I don't know if I like that deal if I was the Boston Bruins GM. I'm going to say I got Milan Lucic, I got David Krejci, I got some good young forwards.
Yeah, but they are like third worst in the league in scoring.
So you want me to take the guy that couldn't score the first 20 games of the season?
he had a real hot streak, dude. Well, Dennis Weidman's having, you know, a really down year.
Yes, he is.
So you're kind of trading scuffing for scuffling here.
Right. Yeah,
did I catch you off guard with this one, dude?
A little bit.
You thought this might be coming?
No, I didn't think this was going to be coming. When I looked at Boston's roster, I thought you might go for Johnny Boychuk. But Dennis Weidman, again, I'm looking at the contracts here. He's the only guy signed long-term. And by long-term, I mean two more seasons. Every other defenseman they have has only one season left, and that includes Zdeno Chara. So.
Right.
I think they may fall into the same kind of situation, unless they're really down on Weidman, because he's been having a really off year, and I haven't really watched him enough to really know if they are getting a little down on him or not. You know, I made the case last year that I thought Dennis Weidman might have had a better year than Zdeno Chara.
Right.
But I love him as a player. I absolutely love him.
I think the point here is, dude, is that if the Sharks are going to make a move, and we both went on the record last week in saying we don't think they will,
mm-hmm.
but if they are, it's going to have to be something that's salary for salary.
And it can't be a two-for-one thing like we did with Heatley. We can't trade two players to get one because that kills it, too. It's got to be even up. It's got to be even up.
So, you know, we're looking at something like, you know, Seto would have to get us a young player. And we already talked, I think the Rangers are a good trade fit here.
Mm-hmm.
I think that...
they're in trouble, too. So
yeah,
they may be over a barrel. That might be a good idea.
And I still think, you know, a guy that you brought up a while ago, you know, a Setoguchi for Ian White and a draft pick might still be something that's floating around.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Ian White's inexpensive. He's one of their best defensemen. He could come in and help us immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's an underrated player. I mean, you don't think of him as being, you know, a top-notch hockey player. He'd come in and play top 4 minutes for us for sure.
Absolutely.
And he can play on the power play. He can play the kill. You know, I think, and then, you know, Ron Wilson would get back a prospect that he's really familiar with. Those types of things would be the only things that I could see happening. But frankly, dude, I don't think anything's going to happen. But it's only fun to entertain and talk about it. And let me tell you, you're Joe Nieuwendyk.
I am.
Was terrible.
I know. But my Daryl Sutter was awesome.
It was good.
Yeah,
not as good as your British accent.
Not nearly as good, Governor.
It sounds like Terrence and Phillip from the South Park movies.
Little bit. Well, you know, they're a British, aren't they part of the Commonwealth or whatever?
That's Canada.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Terrence and Phillip are Canadian.
Yeah, but they're French Canadian.
Are they?
I don't know.
They hate Celine Dion. Anyway, that definitely takes us to the end of this show. Good bit, dude.
Thank you.
If you have feedback on any of this show or just want us to answer any of your questions or anything at all, feel free to comment on the post of the podcast on the blog or send us an email at questions@dudesonhockey.com. Of course, we'll be back again next week. Same time, same place. Say goodbye, dude.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions@dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.